The Robber Barons, the Interstate Commerce Act, Part 1, The Passing. Since 1879, when the Hepburn Commission in New York State had made its exposures and its moderate recommendations, the hue and cry against the railroads had not abated. Now, let me mention something about hue and cry. It's an old term, actually comes from Salic law and the Franks. And what it meant was that if you saw someone robbing you or robbing your property and you cried for help, then everyone within earshot was required to come to your aid or they would be liable for paying for the losses or other sort of things. So that's what the hue and cry actually where it comes from. Well, universally, the evils of powerful combinations in industry and trade were traced to the conspiratorial actions of the railroad barons. Moreover, the scandals of the stock jobbing and railroad wrecking multiplied in the early 1880s. Tales of quick fortunes seized by men who possessed themselves of common carriers and of the purses they maintained for political corruption arose, and it aroused the ire of honest middle-class Americans almost everywhere. What was the feeling of the politicians of the era? Well, they were, as most politicians, sniffing the air nervously for the scent of change of voters, and the scent was getting strong. In these years, whenever business flagged in a state legislature or that the halls of Congress, the statesmen rose to denounce the railroad robbers. The railroads, like the Union Pacific and the Southern Pacific, which of course owed their creation to federal subsidies of both cash and land, they actually refused to repay the government mortgage. And this, of course, added even more fuel to the flames of statesman rhetoric. Their proposals varied from registration regulation plans to construction of a people's railroad by the government, to a nationwide people's canal system, or legislative acts compelling the humane treatment of immigrants and native passengers, that would be regular Americans, on passenger trains. Propositions which always quickly were voted down, thanks to the watchful lobbies maintained by the Huntingtons, the Goulds, the Vanderbilts. Resistance to government measures came not only from the railroad barons, but also from enlightened publicists, such as Lawrence Godkin, editor of the Nation magazine. He fought as if it were a sacred cause against the confiscation of private property, warning that owners and investors would be transformed into charitable institutions once the government intervened. State legislatures had passed acts designed to control the railroads, though most were actually conceived at the instance of the railroad barons themselves, basically to hold down rivals within that state. Yet the constitutional right of state legislatures to intervene had often been sharply questioned. Then the Supreme Court, in the celebrated Wabash versus Illinois decision of 1886, ruled that states had no right to regulate interstate commerce or to interfere in any way with traffic moving across their borders. The railroad barons celebrated this judicial victory, but popular opinion expressed by farmers, labor unions, and significantly large shippers was whipped into a frenzy. They demanded federal action, and at last they got results. With eminent good sense, Congress now decided that something must be done, that the appeal of the people must be heeded, and the concern, as John Sherman said, was, quote, "We're making ready to the socialists, to the communists, and to the nihilists if we don't do something." For a year, the Interstate Commerce Act was debated. The House and the Senate had long disagreements. Nearly all of them seemed honestly bewildered by the problem. Most didn't want to harm the existing railroad systems. Others wanted to do the least that they were expected to do, which is typical. But ultimately, both chambers passed the Interstate Commerce Act of 1887. As one of the representatives said, it was a bill that no one wanted, but everybody voted for. And it's complex. And one of the problems with the members of the House and the Senate was understanding the complexity. So the bill, for example, was supposed to foster competition, general competition. Rebates were forbidden. Pooling was forbidden. Exacting higher freight rates for short hauls rather than long hauls was forbidden. Discrimination between persons, between places, and between commodities was forbidden. Railroads were required to report and provide their accounts. Shippers were permitted to sue the railroads for up to $5,000. That doesn't seem like much today. It was worth a lot more back then, but if you remember what the railroad barons are taking in, this is a pittance. The commission was then set up to carry out the law. Well, it quickly became apparent that the railroads were not going to implement the orders in any way. And then the old guard of the Supreme Court then harried the act on every flank for almost 20 years. They limited the power of the commission. They defended private property by their own decrees. They prevented the commissions from fixing rates. They did every little thing they possibly could. They turned the momentous act into little more than a scarecrow. It was there to frighten the birds, but they really didn't care. As to demands for accounting of their affairs, the railroad barons found that they could just simply refuse these with impunity. And the complaining shippers, when they sued, were of course forced to bear the cost of prosecution. So they quickly learned that their complaints were useless. But although there's a lot of celebrating and there's a lot of jubilation, there is trouble on the horizon because the bankers who are providing all the money, particularly J.P. Morgan, is concerned that ultimately, if something isn't done, there will be real teeth in these laws, and you're just not going to be able to play this game privately forever. So we'll be talking about the Interstate Commerce Act again, and then we'll hit it up one more time when it finally gets some teeth under Teddy Roosevelt. Now, the sources for this: The Robber Barons by Matthew Josephson, America in the Gilded Age by Cashman, and The Age of Moguls, The Story of Robber Barons and Tycoons by Holbrook. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.